applied, and this state's statute creating some enhanced remedies in cases involving senior citizens and health care providers. Clearly a very important area of law to everyone. But to make it simple from the appellant's point of view, when you have a decedent, if the patient has passed away, you can plead 20 different causes of action, but it all boils down to two sets of claims. You can look at it like two buckets, and the two buckets presented in this case by the plaintiffs in their claim, in their complaint, is a survival action brought on behalf of the plaintiff's decedent, that would be the patient, and a single wrongful death action brought on behalf of the heirs. The survival action could be multiple causes of action. You can call it any number of different things. You can call it medical malpractice. You can call it elder abuse. You can call it fraud or bad care. You can call it anything. But the recoverable damages are limited to the pain and suffering experienced by the plaintiff's decedent and his medical bills and potentially attorney's fees. In the wrongful death bucket, the only damages that are recoverable are loss of care, comfort, society, and companionship that the heirs may have lost as a result of the death. We have a simplification in this case because His Honor, Judge Huffaker, found that we only need to examine one of those buckets, because the wrongful death bucket of damages, potential damages, he found in favor of the defendant, the health care provider, did not cause the patient's death. So we only need to look at the bucket of remedies that is within the survival claim. And the statute is very, very, very clear. It provides for the plaintiff's decedent's pain and suffering, which Judge Huffaker identified specifically right down to the dollar, the medical expenses, which he identified right down to the dollar, and attorney's fees. Where we ran afoul, where Judge Huffaker intermingled and created an award that applied to the wrong party, was an award of damages which are wrongful death damages.
And Mr. Beach, let me ask you this. Do you feel Judge Huffaker consciously disregarded the law in his decision?
What I think is, I can't get inside his head, and I don't think that this is the forum to do it, and I don't think that it should even be a challenge. What I think is that when you start with many interwoven claims and causes of action, particularly in a fact setting like this, where you have a grieving family and a suffering patient, intellectually it may be hard to segregate those. The law does it for us. It would be difficult for me to speculate on why Judge Huffaker interwove them, so to speak. But what I do know is that the law clearly segregates out wrongful death damages from the damages which are recoverable by the plaintiff's decedent.
And I appreciate your argument. I think my struggle with the case is the form which it comes to us in. When you have arbitration, generally there's very little appellate review on it permitted under the law, and the district court can confirm it. And that's probably one of the flaws maybe in arbitration, is our case law is so restrictive. And our case of Health Plan Nevada versus Rainbow Medical, which I was on, I was one of the justices, and it was before my colleagues joined the Supreme Court. But I'll just read you this language here, and you can tell me how you would argue around it. And strictly from an appellate standpoint, we say at the end of the case, however, even if the arbitrator made an error of fact or misapplied the law on this issue, it would still not amount to a manifest disregard of the law. Manifest disregard of the law goes beyond whether the law was correctly interpreted. interpreted, it encompasses a conscious disregard of the applicable law. And then it goes on to say the record in that case didn't support that. So that's kind of the standard we're looking at in the Supreme Court. So that's why I asked you if you feel that the evidence would support that type of argument.
What I would say in response to Your Honor's question, and it is, of course, the best question to ask in this forum, but what the statute provides in terms of appellate review of an arbitrator's award is the manner in which it is applied to the parties. And here we have a misapplication of remedies and parties, because the remedy which is identified by Judge Huffaker, the loss of companionship, society, comfort, consortium, is nothing but a wrongful death remedy, which wrongful death plaintiffs can seek. But we know that Judge Huffaker found that there was no wrongful death. The plaintiffs did not fulfill their burden of proof. So we just look to whether or not that is an incorrect application of an award to parties. And in this regard, I think that, yes, this appeal does raise the very question of rights of appeal for arbitrations conducted outside the judicial format. And I think while we know that it's not waived by an agreement to participate in binding arbitration, it is, as a matter of judicial policy, the appeal process is one that supports and reinforces the very valid goal of increasing and supporting alternative dispute resolution or trials in a quasi-judicial format. So that's why I think it is good in a format like this, with your question in mind specifically, to recognize that what we have here is it's like the criminal defendant who is acquitted, but yet he is sentenced to jail. We want to be sure that the right parties within litigation are allocated with the correct remedies or the correct penalties. And that's what I think that this appeal is directed to that, to make sure that it is correctly allocated. Here we have an award which misapplies the remedies identified in the judge's mind according to the burdens of proof and the parties to the action. It's as simple as that. I don't want to overextend my time, so I will turn the matter over to my counsel, Mr. Westbrook, who will address the issue of the damages awarded. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Mr. Westbrook.
Good morning, Your Honors. To kind of piggyback on what my colleague was arguing here, it's important to remember that in looking at the tab 3, which is the amended complaint, there's four causes of action that were brought. The only cause of action that was brought by the heir plaintiffs, the four children, was the wrongful death claim, and that was the claim that was found in favor of the defendant in this action. Now, once the arbitrator makes the decision that there is no cause of action on which the heirs were successful on, that forecloses any further discussion in a decision or particularly the award. There should not be award, there should not be a discussion of them. However, the arbitrator did go forward in two of them. He awarded personal injury, pain, and suffering to Edmund Mansour, who was the decedent, and the heirs to his estate. The second stated award was for the loss of companionship, society, comfort, consortium, griefs, and sorrow for the four heirs. Now, the respondent even agrees there are two common law grounds to be applied when reviewing these arbitrations. The first is whether the award was arbitrary, capricious, or unsupported by the agreement. The other is whether the arbitrator manifestly disregarded the law. It's the appellant's position that the awarding of monetary damages actually applies to both of those. Simply put, if you don't win your cause of action, you're not entitled to any awards. As the plaintiff agreed in his brief, you have to interpret these awards as being the estate because the heirs simply are not allowed to recover anything because they didn't win their cause of action. The disregard aspect, first of all, whether it's capricious, that the question is whether it was based on the law, and clearly an award when you didn't win on the underlying cause of action is by definition capricious. It's not supported by the law. Also, the manifest disregard of law encompasses, and quoting from Bowman from the Supreme Court, an error that is obvious and capable of being readily and instantly perceived by the average person qualified to serve as an arbitrator. You don't have to go outside of the complaint, the amended complaint, and the award that was drafted by the arbitrator to see that there was a manifest disregard for the law because there were awards for the heirs in this. Now, the argument that the respondent makes is that we are interpreting the language that is set forth in the award. They argue that when I quote, personal injury, pain and suffering of Edward Monsieur and the heirs, they're saying that we're interpreting that, but there's no artistic interpretation of that. The word and has a meaning. Any person who is qualified to be an arbitrator can certainly understand that and means inclusion. There's no artistic interpretation there. Likewise, the respondent argues that the loss of companionship, society, comfort, consortium, grief, and sorrow for the four heirs, we're interpreting that as well. But if you look at the plain language, it's for those heirs. Also, if you look at the complaint, the only cause of action that asserts those damages is the wrongful death action. Likewise, the damages that they're discussing are consortium damage. By definition, they're derivative of the injured party's claims. It's not the injured party that has the consortium damages. So it's clear there's no interpretation necessary from reading those. The plain language, when you take it in context with the pleadings, with the complaint, there's no interpretation. This is an award for the heirs, which was not appropriate. Likewise, in the doubling of the damages through 411395, the doubling of damages is for actual damages. By definition, we go through in our brief to describe that by the interpretation or the setting forth of that as well as legislative history, it's our position that that was actual special damages, that the actual damages would amount to the medical special damages involved and not extending to the general damages of the decedent, and therefore it was inappropriate for the arbitrator to double those damages as well. And I see I have a minute left, so I'll leave that.
Save for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Levitt, on behalf of the respondent, Dennis Levitt.
It's rarely that I can't wait to get up and talk, especially before people as imposing as you folks. But thank you. Thank you for your comments, Judge, because I was thinking the exact same thing. There's only basically two ways for an appellate court or another court to overturn an arbitrator's ruling. Like Justice Gibbons said, he has to basically know what the rule is and just say what the law is and say to heck with it and just disregard it. Okay, but the facts in this case are that this arbitration was, they picked Senior Judge Huffaker, 3 or 4 day arbitration hearing. The heirs are here. Their father got killed in a nursing home. They found negligence all over by the nursing home. Okay, we did this arbitration, 3 or 4 days, Judge Huffaker. They don't like the decision of Judge Huffaker. Okay, then they go back to Judge Huffaker again, say, you did this wrong, you did this or that wrong, so change it. Judge Huffaker says, no, this is right. Okay, so they don't like that. So then they do what they're trying to do now with Judge Williams in district court. Judge Williams looks at it the same way and says, no, this is right, you can't do this, everything is correct. The only way that they can do it is to say either he knew the law and disregarded it, or there's the statute 38.242, basically where it says that within 90 days they file the motion, that's where they've done. They have to show that there's been a mathematical miscalculation, 20 plus 20 is 80, something like that. They didn't show that. They have to show that they made a claim, the arbitrator did something on something that was not submitted to them, or the form of the the form of the decision, there's something wrong with the form on the claims that were submitted to it. None of those arguments are made or are clear here. Now, the one other thing is that they fail to mention all along is if you look at 41.100, these damages for loss of consortium, I mean, while their father sits in the nursing home for months and months and months and gets bad, worse, 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 and dies, yeah, Judge Huffaker ruled in their favor in the wrongful death, but he awarded loss of consortium damages, and those damages do survive under 41.100. They do survive, and that's how those damages got in, and that's how Judge Huffaker awarded them, right under 41.100. If you look right, excuse me, 41.100, cause of action, not lost by reason of death, support, companionship, society, comfort, consortium, all of those damages survive. So even if he doesn't find on wrongful death, even if he finds that, okay, your father, you know, he may have had all these things wrong with him, and you sent him to a nursing home, he was sick, they took very bad care of him there, they did all these things that caused all the pain and suffering, caused loss of consortium, all that, but maybe they didn't cause his death. Maybe it's not a wrongful death case. Maybe he would have died anyway because he may have had something wrong with him. But it wasn't wrongful death, but he did all these other things wrong. And so we're going to award these damages. And if he awards it to, what is the difference? I would submit what they're playing is semantics. If he awards the damages to these four, call them heirs, or to the estate, because the damages are awardable to the estate under the direct language of the statute, and the heirs are the estate. So if you want to cut hairs and talk semantics, then maybe technically they may be right. But other than that, they have no argument. Again, this argument that we're here for today has already been heard twice by Judge Huffaker, has been heard by Judge Williams. There's no basis whatsoever to overturn this. What this is we agreed to binding arbitration, and we gave up punitive damages. We said, we'll waive punitive damages, we'll do binding arbitration, you pick the arbitrator, and we'll go for it. And then they don't like the decision, and they keep coming back and back. You just can't do it. I would submit that if you look on the pure, it's their appendix number 6, you look at Judge Huffaker's award, there's absolutely nothing in there that can be attacked that is wrong, and even if it was, they would have to show you that Judge Huffaker, the senior judge that they picked, knew that he was making a mistake and said, to heck with it, I'm going to make this mistake anyway. That's the only way that they can prevail in this court, and I would submit that they haven't done that. And so, therefore, I would ask that you rule in favor of the respondents and affirm, I don't know if it's affirm or whatever it is that you do to make it so that rule in respondents' favor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Levitt. Mr. Westbrook, is it you? Who's going to do the
Just a couple of matters. 41-100 does not create a new cause of action. If you didn't have a loss of consortium claim to begin with, 41-100 doesn't give you a new cause of action. The decedent didn't have the loss of consortium damages. The fact that this is a survival action and 41-100 allows for those damages to survive, while that's true, It doesn't create new cause of action. What they're talking about in that case is if a husband gets injured, a wife has a cause of action for loss in consortium, and the wife dies before it comes to trial, then her estate has the loss of consortium claim. That's why 41-100 allows it to survive. It doesn't create a new cause of action simply because somebody died. The decedent in this case didn't have loss of consortium damages before he died. He doesn't get it created by the fact that it's 4100 afterwards. I think the idea that we would put forward, Your Honors, are in order for attorneys to be able to pick arbitration as a viable option, we have to be able to understand that if the court or with the arbitrator does not apply the law, then they have to have some redress. In this case, it was arbitrary and capricious. He gave damages to a set of plaintiffs that didn't win their case. And that case, I guess that is the point. In order for us to be able to feel comfortable and be able to have this be a viable option, we have to be able to understand that if it's a capricious, if it's arbitrary, if there's a manifest disregard for the law. And the arbitrator had the opportunity to correct the things that the counsel just discussed and chose not to. So I think that shows that he was aware of the problem and he decided not to do anything about it.
Yeah. Question?
Just a comment, Mr. Westbrook and Mr. Levitt both. I understand your arguments. It's really not to the merits of the case. It's just more of a comment on what we're doing with the court, because we're concerned about the issues that you've raised. We have pending before the court administrative docket petition to allow the parties to do private jury trials with full appellate review on the regular standard of review, not the arbitration standard of review. So that is administrative docket petition's been filed. There's going to be another public hearing on it in Las Vegas on June 7th in the afternoon. And ironically, someone like Judge Huffaker would have been eligible to be picked as a private for doing a bench or a jury trial with him. And then the standard review would be the same as if it was a district court trial with a regular jury verdict or a bench verdict here. And the reason I've sponsored that, and one of the reasons I did is I realized that in the arbitration rules, they're very restrictive here. If you have an appeal, what we can look at. Now, we'll take a look at the arguments you both made, and you both made excellent points, at least in my view, and we'll take a look at them. But there is a procedure out there for the Nevada attorneys that you might be able to utilize in the future if the Supreme Court does adopt that.
Thank you, Justice Gibbon. Mr. Westbrook, Mr. Beach, Mr. Levitt, thank you for your interesting and scholarly arguments in this matter and your briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted.